We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
One of those things, a couple of guys.
Andy Randy.
Having discussion.
I be on it all night, man. I be on it all day. Straight up. Pimpy, if you want me, you can find me in that.
What are you looking at me like that for?
What you talking about? We're supposed to make eye contact.
It's the Midday Show with
Andy Barker and my son, my baby boy, Randy McMichael.
When I crack open this mic.
That was the most media member thing that's ever been said.
Starring Randy Montez McMichael as Randy and my firstborn son, Andrew Stephen Bunker as Andy.
The pumps make the yams more yammier.
The whats make the whats more whattier.
Boring answer.
Just make sure you don't touch that dial, then we'll be cool. Touch it and use the fool.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah. Good morning. Welcome in. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the Midday Show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Tuesday. Thanks so much for being with us. Tons to get into over the next 4 hours, as week one is in the books for the NFL. The Braves continue to roll on. I don't know, last night might be the last of Touki Toussaint we see this year. Certainly the last we need to see of him. But first and foremost, good morning to you, Randy McMichael. How are you, man?
Hey, what's happening, man? I'm doing good, man. I went back into my evolving stage, like, probably about 10:30, because I was like, this mother, but you know what? It's okay. I'm doing good, Andy Bunker. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with all the listeners. Thank y'all for always listening to the Midday Show on radio.com. If you're in the whip, if you're desk, we appreciate you always. And everybody knows I evolve when certain people are performing their job. Or no, are called to perform their job.
Yeah, performing probably isn't the right word.
Yeah, and sometimes I don't let it get the best of me, but for some reason, it could have been the spirits in me. I don't know. But something got the best of me last night. But that's neither here nor there. A lot of sports. Got a chance to watch both Monday night games. And watching those games shows how important coaching is sometimes, and how sometimes coaches can overthink things sometimes. And I personally like Vic Fangio, and I'm glad he finally got his chance to be a head coach after all those years of being a coordinator. But, okay. I mean, but – He's defending his decision to do what he did last night and take them timeouts with him like they was some damn sprint rollover minutes, but they're not. But yeah, I'm doing good, man. How about you?
Does he think that they're like vacation days and they get to come with you into next year? He must not work for Intercom, because at the end of the year you don't get those vacation days unless you use them. Just like timeouts. And that is the funny thing about it. I'm with you, Randy. I'll be honest. I didn't stay up to watch the end of the game. I tried. I only made it till halftime of game number two. I didn't stay up to watch it.
I fought through, bro.
Did you make it? Good for you.
Oh, I made it. That's awesome. I was fighting through it. I made it. And it was the funny thing about the game was the fact that the kicker, all them damn kicks he makes. I mean, he missed. And then when he makes it, and then everybody, oh yeah, we had confidence. Not a hell we didn't.
No, you didn't.
No, we did not.
He missed three field goals and an extra point. It's funny that you bring that up, because I had written down a handful of just different week one questions that you would maybe wonder but not really know about unless you're in an NFL locker room, that I was going to ask you in the NFL No Huddle, but you mentioned, or you referenced two of them, so I'm just going to get to them now. Like, when you're on the sideline and you have a kicker who's had a game like that, like, what is going through your mind? Like, I mean, you have to, like, they're going to kick it. You got to hope, I guess. You got to trust him. It's like a 25-yard field goal. But, like, are you already preparing yourself mentally to be disappointed at that point?
Hell yeah.
Or are you like, he's going to do it. He's going to get it right. He's going to make it this time.
Like, hell yeah, especially when it comes to, because I've been through a couple situations with kickers where they got hurt in pregame and the punter has to come in and kick the damn field goal.
Oh, gosh.
And it's been a situation. Hell, I was on a team when Wes Welker had to kick a field goal because Orlando Mari got hurt. All right, Wes was our kicker. He kicked off because we were like, because we're sitting there, we're open to kickoff. We're playing in New England. We're sitting there, and so we're standing on the side, like, and you know, and we're, you know, going to congratulate the defense, like, go, let's go, pump them up. And we look out, and damn, Wes is kicking off. Like, what the hell is going on? Alindo got hurt in warm up, so Wes has to go out there and kick off and kick field goals. I've been on a team where a damn kicker, love him to death, but he missed three damn field goals, and then we're coming down for a game winning field goal in St. Louis, and we're like, okay. We said all of us are, because we're running off the field and we take a knee right there close to the field goal. We're like, you know, I'm going to miss it, right?
Did he
clank?
Oh,
yes, he missed
man.
It. Yeah. You know, so I'm just like, you know, but you always got to have your teammates back, Andy. So sure, they always got to sure. Hey, yeah, we knew he was going to make it. No, the hell you didn't. What about that whole game made you think that he was going to hit that? Now, I'm glad he did. Good for him, the confidence. And it's going to be a different choice for Vrace because that's his guy. That's his former teammate.
It's Steven Gostkowski. You know, yeah. There's maybe a little bit more leeway just because who he is and yeah. What his track record is. But, yeah, you're right. He's got to make a choice. How many guys would have had to have gotten hurt? Because Olinda Mari gets hurt, Wes Walker steps in. How many guys would have had to have gotten hurt before Randy McMichael kicks a field goal? Didn't Ndamukong Suh kick a field goal at one point? Cause
I think he did, didn't he?
He's like a toe punter. Yeah,
because who was our kicker was Matt Turk, and Turk couldn't kick field goals. Turk was just a punter, so he wasn't a good field goal kicker, so that's why Wes was kicking. But then you got to understand, Wes is left-handed, so they had to switch the whole protection
to
a left-handed punter. Huh?
He's left-footed too?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Huh. Yes. Didn't so, I mean, it was, man, it was crazy. But, yeah, hey, man, he made them, you know, and I make fun of kickers and all that, but I mean it is a hard job to do. I wouldn't want that pressure, but like, or you got dorks like the kid up in Bullock up there in Cincinnati. Like I told you yesterday, they talking about it wasn't serious. No, it better be serious. If I'm a player in that locker room, oh no, bro, it better be serious. I don't want to see you kid. I don't want to see you joking. I don't want to see you do. I don't even want you to talk. I want you to be in there on that training table, getting surgery on your leg.
You got to miss at least three games.
If
you got hurt in that situation, you got to miss at least three games.
At least. I don't want to see you. I don't want to see you because it's one thing. I say it's a hard job to do. It really is. Don't get me wrong. Sure. It is a hard job to do, but that's your job. And for us to sit there all that whole game sweating and fighting and hurting and all that stuff, it was always a rule. It was always just a regular. If you miss them field goals or whatever, and you come in to work on that Monday or that Wednesday or whatever, and the kickers are in the steam room, the cold tub or the hot tub, when a real player come in, you got to get the hell out. Yep.
I believe it.
Get out.
I believe that was strictly enforced as well. I have no.
Oh, hell yeah.
I have no problem believing that whatsoever. I'm going to save the Vic Fangio coaching question for the NFL No Huddle because I want to get to another coaching question. Obviously, Dan Quinn met with the media quite a bit yesterday. The coach's show last night on 92.9 The Game. He'll be on the station with Dukes and Bell today as well. And there's a lot of questions for Dan Quinn, rightfully so. You come out of a week one like that, you give up 38 points, you lose the way the Falcons did. There's going to be a lot of lingering questions. And I know, Randy, you and I spent a lot of time yesterday talking about the lack of adjustments and the big moments, the fourth down plays, the big moments where the Falcons came up short. Dan Quinn addressed that a lot of that yesterday and obviously was asked about those fourth down plays. And I understand that like he's not going to divulge everything that they're working on and give us like the fullest, you know, dictionary encyclopedia answer on every question that we want. But I have a hard time with the question about fourth down being answered with, yeah, we just have to get better on fourth downs. We just have to clean up those. I just think that that's such an oversimplification of the issues that led to those fourth downs not going the way you wanted, because each of them was different. Like they're all very different failings that the Falcons had in order for those things not to go correctly. And I mean, to me, the biggest one, especially on defense, is that the coverage just wasn't very good. And I don't know how you can get better and coach and look at film and all that kind of stuff. But like, we're talking about a secondary that's had pretty rough coverage the last couple of years. And that showed up again big time on Sunday. Is that something that you can just say, yeah, we're just going to fix that from week one to week two and the coverage is going to be better?
Well, the thing with it, Bunk, is that in order for you to fix it, you got to get better on first, second, and third down. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. And I know Brian mentioned that in our pre-show meeting. But I look at it as, you know, when you go back and you look at all the fourth downs, they should have got all of them. It was just a – misstep here, or you didn't fan the right way on the pass to Todd Gurley, or maybe you did, and because they were throwing hot off of that free guy, but yet, you know, do you slide it the other way? I mean, there's so many different scenarios for the Falcons when you talk about them not converting on fourth down. As far as the coverage, I mean, it was, he got beat. I mean, there's nothing that's not okay. Everything is coachable, but that's just Isaiah Oliver knowing that you cannot get beat in that situation. You cannot let him get off your press. That's coaching, but that's more of a technique and just the player himself, mm-hmm. as far as giving up that big play on fourth down. And those are things that can be correct. Those are the things when you look at, and I go back and I look at all the mistakes that the Falcons made or whatever. It's all can be corrected. But that's the most frustrating part about it, because we keep saying that.
Yes. You
know, there are no perfect games. I've never played a perfect game. I've had mistakes. I've been beaten before. It happens in a game. You know, it does. It just is what it is. But they consistently always have the same issue at critical times. Jake doesn't step the right way. They don't fan to the right guy, or they do fan it, and Matt doesn't just lay the ball up over the defender's hand and drops it to Todd Gurley. Matt doesn't step into the throw on Julio like we talked about yesterday. There's always that thing with this football team, and that's the most frustrating thing, because we always talk about the little things. The little things have you losing more games than big things every single time.
Oh, absolutely.
You lose more games to little things than big things every single week. It is amazing, because a lot of those little things are often overlooked by everybody until you go back and look at them.
Absolutely. And we focus on the big things, and the Isaiah Oliver play obviously is a big thing. And I understand that, like the scoring plays are more glaring. They're going to get more attention and all of that. But just think of how much time we spent last year, Randy, after weeks saying, well, yeah, they're fixable. The problems are fixable, but they didn't get fixed. Like it's okay if they're fixable, I suppose, as long as you fix them. But if you don't, and all these little things continue to lead to failings on fourth down or any other time during the game, then maybe they aren't fixable. And that's the thing that's really frustrating. Like, I'm not hyper-focused on that Isaiah Oliver play. I'm more focused on a quarterback going 31 of 35 and not being able to really remember too many plays where those passes were contested. Too many plays where there was tight coverage and Russell Wilson had to throw a laser beam into a perfect spot. I saw a quarterback back there who, you know, bought some time moving around with his legs and was able to kind of get it wherever he wanted to all game long. And I know it's one game, but we also have the track record of the last couple of seasons, because everybody wants to say, yeah, that's Russell Wilson. He might win the MVP this year. But we got a track record of the last couple of seasons of guys that are not Russell Wilson having very similar days. And that's what frustrated me about Sunday, was it just looked a lot like, I don't know, Jacoby Brissett last year, Marcus Mariota, who got benched and isn't even on the team anymore last. Like, there was a lot of guys who weren't Russell Wilson who did exactly what Russell Wilson did on Sunday last season. And that's what's troubling to me about what happened to open this season.
Yeah, it's going to be – until you get these things fixed, they're going to continue to do it. You know, and we were having a little – me and you, we were all talking, and I look at it like this. Russ was comfortable, man. Russ is a great player, but Russ was comfortable. I mean, I think that's the thing about it. He was comfortable, and he was able to get – they were able to do whatever they wanted to do. We talk about, you know, was it because you're playing the Falcons you could throw the ball, or was it a focus for the Seahawks? I think it was a little bit of both. I was just reading some articles before we came on air. This was like a – this was a mandated thing about him throwing the ball more. He wanted to throw the ball more.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if it looks like this every week, because they threw the ball 70% of the time. We're talking about a Seahawks team that ran the ball 55% of the time a couple years ago. They threw the ball 70% of the time on Sunday. If they do that all year, okay. But if it's because the Falcons' secondary is one you pick on, that's a problem for us. We'll come back. We'll get into what's trending, including whether or not Brian Snitker knows the answer.
I don't know. I don't have the answer for it.
Dang it.
You know, I don't know.
He doesn't know the answer. We'll see if we do. Coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, time now for What's Trending.
A look at the top trending headlines of the day.
Oh my God.
Brought to you by Reliable Heating and Air. With over 200 fully stocked trucks ready to help, Reliable Heating and Air offers next day installation, or we pay a $500 installation guarantee. Call for details.
Part of, you know, playing good defense is, you know, the communication. It's player to player. It's on the field. But having the disguises also help. Certainly when you're, you know, playing a quarterback such as Russell, who's got good man and zone indicators. Okay, if it's, you know, one or the other, this is where I'm going to go. So having the communication to, you know, to know when to show the look and when not to, That's an important thing. And so give them credit, you know, certainly for Seattle, on a team that it really had come in with a heavy emphasis on the run. You know, for them to throw the ball, you know, as effectively they did, you know, that was a real factor in this game for sure.
What's trending here to kick off the show on a Tuesday, the midday show with Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. That's Dan Quinn yesterday meeting with the media, who'll be on the radio station later on this afternoon as well. Getting into a couple of different things there. And one thing that we kind of hinted at in the first segment there, Randy, which is, well, Seattle normally runs the ball a lot. They've been a very run-heavy team the last couple of years. They were not run-heavy at all on Sunday. In fact, they were pass-happy. And I don't think it was just an adjustment to something that they saw. I think it was a game plan. They came out and threw the ball 5 out of the first 6 plays. And maybe that's who Seattle wants to be this year. Maybe. I know Russell Wilson has said that that's what he wants, and it makes sense. If you look at the numbers, they're better when they do that. Or maybe teams look at what the Falcons have been the last couple of years and say, that's a team that we can throw. Or maybe it's a little bit of both. One thing's for sure, they were not that that ground and pound whatever that a lot of people associate with Pete Carroll. They were throwing the ball all over the yard on Sunday to great effect and great results.
They executed what they wanted to do. Russell looked great, and what they did was is that they were able to, you know, change up the protection, change up the routes. When they went downfield, they were able to give Russ enough time to get the ball downfield. And, you know, this seems like, you know, this is where Seattle's going. And I'm like, we're paying this dude all his damn money. Let's let him go out there and win football games for us. Let's let him go do what he wants to do. And so I thought there was a lot of it. But, I mean, you got the matchups you wanted. And, you know, when you look at DK Metcalf, I love his, you know, how they use him. He's a runner. That he's a route runner that can do certain things, and he does those well. He runs slants well. He runs takeoffs really well, and they emphasize that. They know that, you know, that Lockett, he's great in the slot, as fast as he is. And when he's running away from you is when he's at his best. So, I mean, they did such a good job of game planning against his defense. And to what Harry Douglas was saying in the update, he's right. He cannot let the Dallas defensive line determine the outcome of this game, because these guys, they get after the passer. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to get after the passer. And no slight towards Seattle's defensive line on Sunday. They ain't these guys as far as the edge rushers. They're not those guys. They're going to – Jake Matthews and McGarrett, they're going to have their hands full with these edge rushers. So it'll be interesting to see how Dirk Cutter and them, how they work that into the game plan. But, yeah, the Falcons, they just – it's just always but almost. Damn it. Ooh, great play, but, you know, and they got to get that butt out of those great plays and just make great plays, man. I mean, you saw what this offense can do when it's working. You got to stay ahead of the chains. You got to keep Todd Gurley involved in the game early and often. That's the thing about it is that you got – because the thing with Dallas is – and, of course, we'll get into it more and more as this week goes on. Dallas wants to run the football. I mean, I know you talk about Dak and everything. It's all about 21. It's about that dude, and he was fantastic Sunday night. It's all about that guy. So they got to.
What if they come in and throw the ball 70% of the time?
Yeah, I'll take Dallas throwing the ball 70% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying on paper. I'm with you. If that happens, then that's probably a win. That means that you did a good job defending them. Because here's the thing: like, it's one game, and there's certain things you can take out of it, but it's really hard to know a big picture meaning of some things that happen, because it could just be a fluke. It could just be a game plan, whatever. It could just be a Sunday. Like, the Falcons offensive line did a pretty good job, we think, of protecting Matt Ryan. But also, like you said, Randy, the Seahawks pass rush isn't very good. So we're going to find out more about whether or not the offensive line is better this week against a team that has a really good pass rush. I think we feel pretty good about the defensive line generating a pass rush against Seattle, at least in the first half. Well, Dallas is a pretty good offensive line too. So we're going to find out what that looks like. It looks like the Falcons did I think this is numbers kind of lying to you. It looks like the Falcons did a really good job against the run. The Seahawks didn't even try to run. They just threw the ball over the yard all day. Why would they run the ball if they didn't have to?
Exactly.
We'll find out if the Falcons are better against the run on Sunday, because Ezekiel Elliott is going to get the ball. Same thing with Ray. If you pay somebody all that money, you're going to give them the football and try to let them win you football games. Ezekiel Elliott gets paid a lot of money to try to win football games for the Dallas Cowboys, so we'll find out. Now, if they don't, if Dak Prescott throws the ball like Russell did,
exactly,
then because maybe it's not a Seattle and the Dallas thing. Maybe it's an Atlanta thing.
They got some dudes that can get the ball now.
They sure do.
You know, Gallup is nice. We know Amari's nice. This kid, CeeDee Lamb, can ball. I mean, they got some dudes that could get downfield and everything. But the Falcons, you know, and one thing that you listened to what Dan was saying yesterday, talking about they got to do a better job of disguising and all these different things on the back end. I get all that. But why the hell did y'all think of that before the game?
Yeah.
Some
of that, I mean, like just guys getting beat one-on-one. Disguise it however you want. Like if but you're just getting beat by the man, you're getting beat by the man.
Because you're gonna have a long damn season, and this is for any team. You're gonna have a long damn season if your corners can't cover man to man.
Yeah.
Period.
Right.
Period.
Again, disguise whatever you want to disguise.
And even when Seattle ran that cover three and all that, they did run some man. They weren't in that the whole time. They did run some man. If you can't, and that was the best way you would beat that Seattle defense if you can get Richard Sherman and Brandon Brown are in these guys into some man routes. Now, that was a younger Sherman, so he was a much better at reading man routes. But that was what you wanted to do, get off the jam and be able to maneuver and do those things. That's what gave them trouble when the Legion of Boom, when they would give up plays in the passing game. It was mostly against man. If you can't cover man to man in this league, you can't play in this league. I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, I'm exactly right. You could be in a scheme that fits your abilities to a T. But eventually, at some point, like what happened on Sunday, there's going to be moments where you're manned up. And you got to jam them, you got to get physical, which is what Isaiah Oliver was supposed to do on the line with DK Metcalf, or whatever. Be faster, be reactionary, be an athlete. Like, be out there and make a play. And, you know, the other guy made plays on Sunday. Yeah. The Falcons didn't. So they got stuff to work on. There's no question about that. Dirk Koetter spoke with the media yesterday as well, talking about what the offense needs to work on.
You know, we were 0 for 3 on fourth down, overall 50% on third down, which you take, that'll 50% on third down will win you a lot of games. But unfortunately, we were better in third and longer than we were in third and fourth and short yesterday. And you know, the way those fourth down plays went, we needed two of the three to go our way, and they didn't. So, you know, I'm going to always be questioning myself on every single play that's not successful. So, you know, you're either going to blame the play caller or you're going to blame the execution. That's up to you when you look at it.
Or both. I mean, I think it's okay to spread the blame around and blame both. What does it tell you when third and long is more successful than third and fourth and short?
You're not getting pushed on third and short. Mm-hmm. That's the thing about it. Mm-hmm. Is that when you're in third and long, majority of the time you got to throw the football. Mm-hmm. And you got Matt Ryan as your quarterback. When you're third
and
short.
It's an offensive line thing, isn't it?
When you get third and short, you want to make it to a point where you can do both. But more likely you want to run the football. And Dirk's absolutely correct. You can blame both of him or the execution of the plays because both had a hand in it. You know, you go 50% on third down, you're cool. That's good. That's good enough to win a game. You know, but you know, if you can't get short yardage, that just says more about the push and everything like that. So those are things that coming into the season that we knew that they had to work out: short yardage and red zone offense. I mean, and that's the thing about it is that when you look at how the Falcons want to run the football, you know, Todd is used to. I think Todd is better with the fullback than he is single back in this system. For some reason, that's just how I can view from one game, but it might change as the season goes along. But I think that they got to find a way to get more push and allow him to do what he does. Todd can pick a hole and get through the hole, but if he's searching for holes because everything is in a big mush, that means you need to maybe get some outside runs going or something like that. But yeah, you got to do it better overall. Dallas, they were terrible on third down. That's a big reason why they lost the football game. If you can't get at least a 40-50%, and that's at least, Andy, on third downs, it's hard to win a football game.
Yeah,
hard.
And I think the 50% on third down is misleading as well, because through three quarters when the Falcons were down, they were 4 of 11 on third down. So they picked up some third downs in the fourth quarter, no doubt, and every play counts, and I get all that, but when the game was still in the balance, before they were down by three scores in the fourth quarter, they were not 50% on third down. They were not good on third down, which is why they had to go for it on fourth down so many times. And again, I don't care about if you're good on fourth down. If you're good on first, second, and third down, then you don't have to get to fourth down. So
correct.
It's not something that hopefully we have to focus on going forward. Let's listen to what Brian Snitker had to say about Tukey Toussaint last night.
I don't know. I don't know why the consistency, the problem with command, you know, commanding the fastball again, you know, even commanding your breaking ball. I mean, it's you know, when you leave it in the middle of the plate, and he threw some really good ones. He threw some really good fastballs. The stuff, the curveball was good. It's a, you know, I don't know. I don't have the answer for it. I don't know.
Oh, great. That's exactly how I feel about watching Tuki Toussaint pitch as well. Two and two-thirds last night from Tuki, five earned runs, he's out of the game. Then that dude comes in the game and doesn't do a whole lot better. Two and a third, he gives up five earned runs. The Braves got blown out by the Orioles last night, 14-1.
What the hell was that?
I don't know,
I mean,
man.
Dog, it was one thing. As soon as I saw, I was like, what damn took? And then that dude come in, and you knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, I'm tired of Tuki. Tuki, man, I'll see you in 2021. But this dude right here, like, why do you continuously put, like, is there nobody else that's better?
They've got a difficult decision to make with Luke Jackson because.
God almighty, man. When this is what irritates me about Brian Snicker. When is enough enough? When do you need to see enough to be like, hey, man, sorry.
What's his role?
Like, what I don't get it.
Because the argument was the role didn't suit what he did. Well, this is a different role.
What the hell is his role then?
His ERA is 6. All right, we got to go to break. We'll come back. We'll get the big deal, small deal, no deal. We'll absolutely get back to that later in the show because pitching remains an issue for the Atlanta Braves. Right here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Imagine you like listening to John and Hugh. Now imagine bringing them with you anywhere with the Radio.com app. Download our app and listen anytime to any show.
Or stream on your smart device.
You can even rewind up to 24 hours and catch things you missed.
Download the Radio.com app now from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Tuesday. 20 minutes away from an NFL no huddle, a lot to get to. DJ Shockley going to join us at 11:20 as he does on Tuesdays. Looking forward to talking to Shock as the quarterback situation at UGA just continues to, I don't know, get more interesting. Every single day you hear a quote from somebody close to the program that gives a vote of confidence to a different guy, don't you?
Like, yeah.
Aaron Murray over the weekend's talking about Carson Beck. Everybody's talking about DeJuan Mathis. Anyway, we'll talk to Shock coming up at 11:20. But Randy, I gotta hurry and get to Brian because Brian, you know that like we have our group text going, but then sometimes off to the side, Brian will send a different text, and he sent me a text that said, "Hey, I have a whole bunch of stories here, just so you know."
Okay,
you know what that means, right?
That means that he needs his time. Well, whatever, man.
It means he really wants us to hurry up and get to him. Well, I mean, we could not.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
And now, 92.9 The Game presents Big Deal, Small Deal, or No Deal with Brian Gebhardt on Andy and Randy Midday Show.
Brought to you by Chattanooga Whiskey, the only Tennessee high malt whiskey. And I know Brian's pretty jacked up today because you know what it is. It's Cole Hamels' eve. Cole Hamels finally makes his first Brave start tomorrow. So Brian is just, I mean, he's fired up. You could tell. Right, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, it's Cole Hamels' eve. But what I'm really fired up about, and the biggest deal to me, is that we've got some Tim Tebow slander. And that's where we're going to start. Okay? Right. So big deal, small deal, no deal. There's a new book out by Jason Cole of Bleacher Report, someone we've had on the station a few different times. We've had him on this show before. And he's writing a book about John Elway's life titled Elway, A Relentless Life. And part of it dives into the 2011 Broncos season and slams Tim Tebow pretty good. So the book says Tebow is egotistical and money hungry. That's a direct quote. The book alleges that Tebow, a devout Christian, charged $50,000 to speak at churches. And it also alleges that Elway's wife, Janet, asked Tebow to do an appearance at a charity event. And Tebow's brother said it would be $50,000, so she declined. There was another staffer from Denver that called Tebow the most self-centered, humble guy I've ever met. Hold on. I got one more bad quote to read, and then you guys can react. Cole also writes in the book about Tebow's on-field play. As one teammate put it bluntly that season, he has no idea what's going on out there. If the first read doesn't work, he's just making it up. Big deal, small deal.
Okay, this is a small deal, and here's why. Jason Cole, that's my man. Jason Cole is my guy, man. And this, I mean, the thing with it is, okay, just because I'm a Christian don't mean I can't make money. You damn right. I need some stacks if I'm gonna come up there and preach my gospel. You damn right. You know, as far as self-centered, I can see that. I can see that. But the thing with when you talk about one teammate, I remember when when that year they beat us in San Diego, they had won the title, the division title. The next year, Eddie Royo comes to San Diego, and Eddie was a wide receiver with that. And that's exactly, Eddie was like, man, we've been sitting around like, what the hell is going on? And I hold their whole thing, get the 2 minutes, and he gonna make some magic. And did he not make some magic that year in the last 2 minutes of every damn game?
He did.
I mean, they were like, you know, 7-on-7, you're supposed to be perfect. Man, they go 0-for-10 in 7-on-7 in practice. That's how bad he was. But they get to the last 2 damn minutes, and he just goes off on everybody. But, I mean, I like Tim Tebow. I never had a problem with Tim. You know, from certain things, he's a hell of a competitor. I think he, you know, one of the best college players I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, this is a small deal. But because it's Brian, he made it into a big deal.
And oh yeah, Tim, Brian, he loves it. He loves talking to him about Tim Tebow.
Oh yeah, and it's funny because Tim was on First Take with them the other day, and Stephen A. talking about, you look like you're glowing. Yeah, Tebow married now. He getting action, so I'd be glowing too.
Yeah, man, 30 years of pent up, you know. He's feeling good about himself these days. Still has a terrible haircut. The worst thing I could say about Tim Tebow is he's got an awful haircut, and he still has it. And he needs to get a better, normal, not 2014 hipster haircut. But that doesn't really matter that much. Just no deal to me. I like Tim Tebow. Seems like a pretty nice guy. I know that, you know, he won a lot of games against Georgia, so it hurts Brian's feelings and all that. But I don't know. If the worst thing you could say about Tim Tebow is he takes himself seriously and he tries to get paid for speaking appearances, then I don't think we learned that much about Tim Tebow personally.
I mean, yeah, I'm Tim Tebow. Yeah, man, I need my 50. You want me to speak at your church?
And okay. You know what? I bet he gets it most times.
Hell yeah.
I bet most times he shows up to speak, he gets his 50. So there you go.
Let me get that.
I have fun with Tebow. Tebow, like Randy mentioned, he's one of the best college players of all time. It just he just crushed me during college times. You know, it was tough. It was tough. Speaking of college football, hang in there. Big deal, small deal, no deal. Dan Patrick, who was right about the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceling their season a few weeks back, saying the following about the Big Ten potentially playing after all this fall yesterday on a show.
Remember, I told you October 10th. It was October 10th as the target date, but they waited another week. Now it's October 17th. Then you're going to have the 19th of December for your Big Ten title game, and then the next day is when the selection committee will have its final four. This is as tight a window as they can have, but I'm told that you can expect Big Ten football.
I don't know what the deal with this, man, because I just saw just a second ago the Pac-12 talking about coming back in late November. I don't know what the hell is going to happen, man. I don't. I want Big Ten football. I want Pac-12 football. I want these kids to be able to play college football. It's just a damn shame that these adults are jacking it up for everybody, man.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know what's going to happen. You would have thought that the vote would have came down sometime this week. Hopefully, the vote comes down in favor of letting the Big Ten play because it's just not. It's not fun without Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State in these schools. Even though everybody's leaving damn Ohio State, I want to see Justin Fields play.
Uh-huh.
So yeah,
I mean, it's a big deal if it happens. It's just, you know, this has been going on for a while now. Don't not do it though, just because you'll look bad. Like, don't not do it because you don't want to admit that you were wrong or that you'll look silly. People will remember you more for not doing it than for saying, you know what? All right, we got it wrong. Whatever new information or these other schools have proved that it can be done or whatever, like, we're going to give it a shot. People will forgive you if you do that. Like, we'll make fun of you probably for a while for making it take so long, but nothing will be worse than not doing it. So do it. Get it done. Not the Pac-12 still talking about playing in November. What? The only reason that the Big Ten is trying to get it in before December, before October 10th or 17th is so they can get their season finished with before the Final Four selection. Not that a Pac-12 team is going to get selected into the college football playoff anyway, but what are they doing? God, that conference is so stupid.
It's so irritating, man.
I hate the. I don't love the Pac-12. I love Washington. But damn, that's a bad conference. They're just so, so poorly run and so silly. It's very frustrating.
Does the way this all played out with the Power 5 conferences boil down to when the Big Ten made this decision, they thought everyone was going to follow suit, wasn't the case?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, they did think that.
They did.
They were all in. They're like, we got this. No. It ain't the SEC. It ain't about them. It's about us. So watch this. Watch us.
And fair enough, like, in this short period of history that we have, that's the way that it worked. You know, like, one player or one team or whatever, one organization would make a decision, and then everyone else would be like, okay, yeah, that's kind of the way it goes. Like Rudy Gobert, and then everything stopped. teams decided not to play and everything stopped. You're moving things back. The Big Ten thought they were going to be that decision maker, and well, the SEC, and the Big 12 said, not so fast. We're going to play football. And now the Big Ten's going to play football also. Thank you, Brian. We'll come back and get to an NFL no huddle to kick off the 11 o'clock hour. Week one is officially in the books. I got a handful of quick week one questions to throw at Randy and all the headlines as well. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.